myself out.
I am afraid of.
I'm terrified and paralyzed by.
I am deathly afraid of.
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello and welcome back to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. You may have thought that after July, I dropped off the map. That is not true. I had a laptop failure that basically took away all of my files. And so I spent the month of August just getting new computer hardware, as well as getting a way to take the information from my old laptop hard drive and put it in my new one. And so we are back with a vengeance with my first episode. We actually recorded today. And so this episode is Mike Tribby. Mike Tribby is a comic here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, as well as his own podcast, Always Tribbin. So please check that out. I'll have links for that in the show notes. In this episode, we talk about growing up in Arizona, working as a comedian here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then we get into his fear of spiders. So let's get into that interview right now with Mike Tribby. All right, my guest this week is comedian and alarm technician Mike Tribby. You don't look like an alarm technician. You look like the person that answers the call when an alarm sounds. Like, you definitely look like an EMT / policeman. No matter what you do, like, you can't change the face, the serious expression,
it is just embedded in me. And it's funny because there'll be times where we're doing an inspection with the fire department and they're like, "Hey, you," and I'm like, "I'm not with you guys. I'm with them, the dirty old guys over here.
I'm just a bystander. I am not the."
Yeah, no, I'm not going to help you in any emergency at all. I don't have the training. Useless.
So you're from Arizona. Did you grow up in the Phoenix, I guess, or?
Yep, basically Phoenix. I grew up in Peoria, okay. Which nobody knows what that is. It's basically Phoenix.
Okay.
Right next door.
What do you miss about Arizona? Because their Mexican food is more, I would say, authentic, like Mex-Mex.
100%. Like, they have Mexican food. Texas does not have Mexican food. Tex-Mex is not Mexican food. It is terrible.
I call it Mexican barbecue is what I call it, more than...
I can see that. But no, the Mexican food, definitely miss that. Federico's out in Arizona. People hate it. It's fast food. You're going to get a stomach ache, but you're going to enjoy it before the stomach ache happens.
Yeah, there's a couple of bartenders at the Mad Hatter that are from Arizona. Like, they went to University of Arizona and stuff out in Tempe, and they were talking about like how they hate the Mexican food here.
Oh yeah. It's so disappointing. Like, even we've done jobs like down by the border, like Weslaco and all that. Mm-hmm. It's still disappointing. I don't know how you can be that close to Mexico and have terrible Mexican food. It doesn't add up.
I just think they just basically, you know, try to pacify us as food people. Like, oh, we make chicken with spices. And, you know, like, okay.
Salt isn't a spice. No, but other than that, I think the thing I miss the most is the mountains. Because mm-hmm. I would go hike all the time, just get up, run to a mountain. And you can't do that here. Not in Fort Worth, at least.
True. I would say the closest thing is probably Jopul Lake. Like, it's kind of hilly and like it leads you right to the center of the lake and it's real scenic and stuff, but it's...
See, I want to risk my life. I want to feel like if I miss this step, I'm going to die. That's the kind of hiking that I like.
Why do you want to die hiking?
Like, I don't want
like, to why die. Do you want, why do you want some, like, a hike with risk versus just
the rush,
the rush of walking.
All right.
The rush of walking where you're not supposed to, basically, is what you're
exactly. If I see something that says stay on the trail, I'm immediately cutting right. And I'm going to just go up that sketchy rock.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It shouldn't be hiking. It should be just called trespassing. That's what it shouldn't be called hiking.
Yeah.
If it's dangerous, it should just be called trespassing. It should even sound dangerous. Like hiking sounds so innocuous because people, you know,
it really is. It's just a fancy way to say, I'm going to go for a walk. That's all it is. I like to add that extreme level to it, though, because why not? You know, mm-hmm. If you're going to die with a good view.
Die the way nature intended. Just
out. Exactly. No ropes, just off the cliff.
Just the man versus nature, or nature wins.
Yeah. See, I'm all about that until I like come across something in nature.
Yeah.
Or like a scorpion or really anything.
Yeah. Or you twist your ankle and then you just have to try to navigate your way back.
Oh, man. You know, it was funny. I was just at the gym talking to my trainer, and he was telling me about how one of his clients wants to be like gorilla strong, like look like a gorilla, all that. And we're just like, first off, that's not going to happen. We roll our ankles. A gorilla could fall out of the tree, be fine. We pick up something wrong and we're done. We're not built the same.
Mm-hmm. We're built to run away. We're not built to fight.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Long distance.
So what made you move from Arizona to Texas?
Honestly, I'm still trying to figure that out. Honestly, like this was not planned. This was, I was in Arizona. Didn't have anything really. I wasn't really doing anything. I was just working, dropped out of college because I, you know, didn't feel like it was for me. And I was at a point where I just had nothing going on. And I was like, I don't want to keep doing this. And I had a cousin that lived out here in Texas. And I was like, you know what? Let me go meet him. I'll just go out here for a couple weeks, have a nice vacation. And that was 7 years ago.
Okay. And so you just...
I just had nothing going on. I was like, hey, let's see what Texas is about. And so far, it's just been the longest vacation of my life.
And so did you bring like the desert here? Because it seems like ever since you moved here, like it feels like we're slowly becoming Arizona, to where it's like a month of just heat and then a month of just monsoon.
The thing that upset me the most when I got here, and I really should have paid more attention in class, because I thought Texas was colder than Arizona. I figured like there's nothing as hot as Arizona. Texas has to be colder. And that was my whole logic. And then I got here and like it wasn't. It was worse. It was that you can't breathe out here. Your knees sweat. There's so many things that just shouldn't happen, but they just happen when you're outside in Texas.
Yeah.
So maybe it's my curse. I'm meant to live in the heat forever.
And so you're also a stand-up comic. And so how long have you been doing stand-up?
Oh man, that's I really don't know. Like I've tried to think about like the first time I went to Hyenas and did a little set. I really don't know. Like I feel like it's been maybe close to 2-ish years.
Okay.
But when I first started, I thought like Hyenas Fort Worth was the only place to do comedy.
Sorry.
So I would go there like once a month or something. And just, it wasn't until like I'd been going for maybe 5 months that somebody was like, hey, you know, there's other mics, right? Like, you know, there's other places to do this. And I was like, no, I didn't. So I don't know. When do you think you can officially say you even started? That's my question.
For me, it's the first time I went on stage. It was like, you know, just basically I'm going to do it. And it was at Backdoor Comedy Club on August 29th of 2016 or 2006.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Sorry. And so 2006, I'm just sitting out front of that location of Backdoor Comedy Club. And, you know, three other people decided to start that day. And, you know, one of them was Casey Coleman. And we just all kind of became a little crew of new comics. And so we would, when you start looking for faces that started with you and stuff. So you're like, hey, who can I talk to? You know, it's like school, like who?
Yeah.
Who can? What other, who else has been in my class? Like who else is? And as those people kind of taper off, then you start to, you know, start to be friends with maybe the grade in front of you or the grade that's behind you. And then they taper off and it's just like you just basically, you know, around the 3 or 4 years, basically group of people that you've, you know, hang out with. And so, you know, like Seth started 2 years before me and like we, you know, we're really good friends. Barry Whitewater started years after me and we're good friends. And so it's like one of those things where you just, your friend group shrinks, but you just get to know more people that have been doing it around the same time you have and either have the same, you know, similar frustrations.
Definitely. There's a lot of frustrations.
Yeah. But it's better to be somebody that's struggling with the same thing. Like I, you know, tell a lot of people that, you know, are below me. It's like, you know, your frustrations of, you know, I could complain to you about, oh man, I didn't get this gig, you know, and you're like, I would kill for any gig, you know, so you have to have groups, you know, that's in that same skill level. It's not a click thing, but it's like, if you want to vent about something, it's hard for me to vent about, oh man, this is the first week I haven't worked in comedy for this all year. You know,
I'm like, you've consistent weeks.
Yeah. And so people, you know, and it's a hard thing to, you know, vent about with somebody that's, you know, hey man, I'd kill for someone just to notice me and put me on a show. You know, it's
that, right.
It feels like me right now.
That's me though. hey, I'm over here, guys.
Yeah. And you're always, you know, in the like first 2 or 3 years, you feel like you're slaving in silence. Like you're doing mm-hmm. work and stuff, but it's like a tree falling in the woods. If nobody's there, it doesn't make a sound. You know, do I make an impact if no one with any kind of credibility watches or sees the progress I'm making? It's just,
yeah, you just described my entire comedy career right there. That's,
but it's just, that's everybody. Everybody goes through those hurdles and stuff. Like I would go, like year 2 and 3 of my comedy career, I would go dead last. I would go to every open mic and I would either be like super early or the very end of the mic just so I could make sure I made every single mic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really it. And it's such a grind, really. And that's one thing I'm trying to like taper with myself. It's like you get like a little success and you're like, all right, it's going to keep building. And then nothing happens for a month and you're like, what am I doing wrong? It's still trying to,
yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out like the networking aspect of comedy. That's probably the least thing I'm good at.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with that and I'm at my level and I've just, you know, it's like, hey, I'm a great person, you know, you know, you send tape, but I mean, you've got to think like every city has their group of people, and I'm sure every city has middle-aged white guy, you know, funny white guy comic, you know, and so it's,
oh yeah, there's a thousand of me, yeah, there's
and that, so it's like it's very hard for me, I feel like, oh well, it's hard for me to expand because, you know, why would they book me if they have some, because it's all about just getting to know and people knowing you and helping, you know, helping out and just earning that trust that if I put you on in a spot that you're going to be really good and everything else and not just, you know, all of a sudden, you know, do something, you know, provocative or not do well. It becomes a trust. It's a game of just knowing faces. So it's like the more, just like watching open mic list, when you first showed up at Hyenas, you were probably fifth or sixth block.
Yeah.
And then
bottom of the barrel,
as Eric knows you and you volunteer for stuff to help Eric out with, you've gradually, you know, moved into third and fourth block. And then now you're locked in as probably the host of second block or some, you know, going somewhere at the end of, or beginning and end of second block.
Yeah. I'm lucky to where I'm still right now going up before midnight. That's kind of my,
yeah.
As long as I can get up before midnight, I know I'm doing all right.
But it's because Eric can put your face when he sees your name on that slip mm-hmm. of paper and like, okay, this is I know this guy, boom. And he's,
yep.
It's just one of those things where people, you know, as you get known, people will throw you things. Just like, you know, Yasha left you with Redfield's Tavern when, while he's and on sabbatical. And
yeah, I still don't know. I don't know if he's coming back, and like one day he'll just pop up and be like, hey,
y'all look similar. So I thought maybe he was your cousin.
You wouldn't be able to tell if you just interchanged us. You'd be like, oh, Yasha got rid of his tattoos.
I just feel like
that's it.
You're like Goofus and Gallant from the highlights. Like you're Gallant and he's Goofus.
We were joking about, because he's like, you know, we're the same dude, but he's like the Russian version and I'm the German version.
Okay.
Same dude, just different backgrounds.
So what has been like the highlight of your comedy career? What would you say has been like Mike Tribby's, like if he was, if you were to walk away from stand-up today, what would be the one memory you would take away?
The highlight. There's not too many that stand out like a lot. I'd say I think it might have been the first or second show I did for Rose City Comedy out in Tyler. There was just a night where everything just kind of clicked.
Okay.
I was great with my crowd work. Everybody was having a great time. And one of my friends had come to see the show and they were like, that was the first time they'd seen me do stand up. And they're like, wow, you're like a professional comedian. And I was like, damn right.
Yeah. Disregard all the other like Instagram posts and stuff about me.
Yeah, yeah. No, focus on this one, right? I'm going to take that show and that's going to be my clip for the rest of my life.
That's awesome, though. I mean, some nights you just get that where it's like you just feel like you're with the crowd, is with everybody, and it's just everybody. A lot of that is if you take a comedy class of any kind or you do one of those showcases, those are the best sets you'll ever have because everybody in the showroom or, you know, attending wants everybody to do well. And so they're very warm, and it can almost be misleading at times too, because you're just like, nothing you say can go wrong. And sometimes things should go wrong. Like you said, there should be a little bit of, oh, maybe I don't say that. You know, just you. So I've seen people that have done showcases, because I took Dean's class back in 2009, Dean Lewis, and we did the showcase, and some of the people that did Dean showcase just basically did, I would say, subpar written material, but because it got such a huge response, they believe that subpar material at some point would get that same response again, so they would just hang their hats on that same subpar set and not change or deviate because, oh, well, this one time it worked.
Yeah, hey, that is a nasty rabbit hole to fall in.
Yeah. 'Cause
you get one laugh and you're like, I am the greatest comedian ever. People will always laugh at this. And then you can go to another mic the same night and get just silence.
Yeah, I always try to work on that stuff. Like I play the law of averages. Like I'll do jokes for a week or a month straight and just, okay, let's see, you know, and just keep note of, okay, this worked here, this didn't work, why didn't this work, what is, you know, and I just kind of play, I have one, I always open or close with a bit that I know works so that I can put my material against that bit. And so it's like, okay, what is that bit, how does that bit compare to the rest of my bits?
And so that's smart.
It becomes like a measuring stick. And so you do that so that you can kind of gauge it versus, okay, you can, you know, roll with your closer to close the show. And also, or if it's a tough crowd, you throw your closer bit first because you want to get their attention and say, hey, you know, there's, you know, some skill here. I don't want you to just, because it's amazing how watch people, how they respond when they feel like they're losing the crowd. Like some people,
you just blame the crowd. That's,
well, you just watch
the crowd's fault.
You can see some comics just give up. Like I've heard, you know, you'll hear the, oh, I'm bombing so hard right now. And it's such a, I get frustrated because I'm like, on a professional show, you can't do that. You can't.
No.
You can't, it would be like you going into your alarm job. Like, I can't, you're telling this as this old lady's watching you. I don't know what I'm doing right now. I just really, you know, I don't know if this alarm's going to work.
I've actually done that a few times.
I think this alarm is may not function when you need it. And it's that same kind of mentality when you tell people, you say to a crowd you're bombing, and it's just you trying to get a laugh. It's not really, because I feel like half the people don't feel, you know, even when they say they're bombing, they don't believe that they're bombing. They're just throwing that out there to try to garner some sort of laugh response, mm-hmm. to make them feel more at ease that they're not getting any response.
Yeah, I feel like you're trying to gauge, like, is anybody listening at all? Can I get any kind of reaction? The worst is, though, is when I've seen people say, you know, I'm bombing, and the crowd would be like, yeah, you are.
Well, at that point, you should just get off stage. If you're saying to yourself, I'm bombing, you know what, then tap out. Why continue for the next 2 to 3 minutes to make it worse by trying, you know, if you're already basically saying, you know, there's nothing I can do, then mm-hmm. then don't do any more. Another one of my pet peeves is stuff when people, you know, not doing well, but you know what, I'm gonna do my time. I'm like, well, you're not really doing time if you're not really working on anything. You're just going up there just to, now you're just making it worse for everybody because you've told them, I'm doing badly, but I'm going to be here, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm not going to get off stage and try to learn from this. I'm just going to sit here and be indignant and show you guys that I will sit up here for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And that's the ego thing, you know, sometimes you just gotta say, all right, it's not my night. Just come back again.
Just look at it objectively. It's not like people take bombing as if people are out there like it's a room full of their enemies and that they just want, you know, that's they have something against them. It's like, it's like, it's not that they don't like you. It's what could you have done better to get, you know, to maybe to do something? Is it just you are so nervous on stage that everybody else gets nervous watching you because of how nervous you are? Because you're a reflection of what you give back. So if you're, you know, in a bar show, you don't know what if people are listening or not, and you just go for silence. But it's also, you can't just be on a stage in a room being super nervous and expect to get laughs. There has to be some. They see that and they feel that. It's just like a stewardess and on an airplane. If you know they're all, you notice they're always smiling. They're trying to make you smile by being smiley.
Huh.
So it's a.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, stewardess is always like everything in an emergency situation. Even the photographs are smiling. You know, because they want people to feel confident and comfortable, like, hey, you know, like if this thing were to go down, we're all dead, but hey, you know, seatbelts, you know,
we're smiling about it.
It's, you'll never see a stewardess not being smiley or, you know, warm, because you're on a plane and they want you to basically reflect, you know, happiness and confidence, like, oh,
I'm gonna be checking for that now every time I'm on a plane. I'm gonna be looking.
Yeah, watch them. They're all
checking.
So you're the stewardess, and if the plane's going down, you're still like, hey, just stay calm. Everything's
Be comfortable.
Yeah,
buckle your seatbelt. You'll be all right.
And so,
I don't think any smile in the world could calm me down if my plane started to like fall out of the sky.
Groupthink's a powerful thing. Like you'd be surprised.
Yeah, true.
Like it's amazing how people love like raunchy comedy material one-on-one, but then you put them in a room full of people and no one's laughing at that raunchy material because they don't want to be the one person in a group that admits that they like raunchy material if nobody else is laughing.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's
that's a tough one.
That's a challenge. And so it's like, you can tell that some jokes, you know, have potential, because when you talk to people one-on-one, they'll be like, that's funny. But when they get into a group, just the fear of that joke basically being the one person that laughs at an offensive joke, drives people to, you know, so yeah, when you like, do a corporate, when you do like a, if you ever get to do a corporate shows and stuff for companies, you'll see that a lot because their boss is in the room, not even their boss, but their big boss, like their CEO is in the room. Mm-hmm. And if you laugh at a joke that the CEO finds offensive, you know, if it's an uncomfortable situation for you. And so
You might not get that Christmas bonus.
Everybody, yeah. Well, everybody watches their CEO and sees what he laughs at. And so they, you know, basically, you know, kind of hold themselves back just to make sure that they don't out themselves.
And that's why we do comedy in very, very dark rooms.
Yeah. And it's also to promote that, hey, the attention should be on. It's because it's focusing attention. Movie theaters do the same thing. Like the lights dim, and then the movie theater curtains used to, they would just open. Now it just kind of,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Like it used to, we used to not have like the little screen open or anything. It would just be just a off screen. And then the curtains would.
I have not thought about that in a long time. You just show up now and everything's just, I don't think I've shown up to a movie before it's already like halfway through the
previews.
I was going to say credits. That's not it.
Yeah.
Ever. At least not for a long, long time.
I try to make the previews, but yeah, it's that they just have like the trivia at all times. Like they have something on the screen because they realize, oh, this is an opportunity to advertise. And before, you know, like 1980 something, like the screen would be dark when you walk in a theater. And so it was like, it was interesting. Like it had a curtain in front of it. And so it would pull back and like, they would just turn the lights down and the curtain would pop and you're like, oh shit, here we go.
A grand opening.
Yeah. And that's how it's basically just a way to keep people from talking. Cause if you have a lighted showroom, like it promotes talk, like every bar, like when the bar has, you know, Mad Hatters instead or Hat Tricks, Mad Hatters, sorry. You have lights going, you have people talking. And so if say Bailey were to be able to dim the lights in the bar, you would listen and you would hear the talking start to die down because they're like, what's going on? And so, so it's things like that, that, you know, just kind of subliminally guide people. And so,
yeah, I get that. That's a tough one too. Cause you're with Hatter, you got the bar facing one way and the stage completely opposite.
Yeah. And so
it's a challenge.
Yeah. And some clubs are like that. Some clubs have just like Plano House of Comedy has, you know, side seating chairs. And so you're because they like to, for service purposes, having that way, it's easier for the servers to go down. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, yeah.
One long table. Sense. And so it makes it easier in some aspects. And so that's kind of how they go about it.
Yeah. Well, I realized working the Hyenas last weekend that there's so many little nuances that go into the show. Mm-hmm. I just always figured like, you know, just show up, sit wherever, doesn't matter. Have a great time.
Yeah.
No, it is so much more of like a business and game planning everything than I could have imagined.
All right. Yeah.
It's really cool to see.
Yeah. It's
how everything operated.
Yeah. It's a smooth operation for the most part, but it's just, it's amazing how just one small part of stand up is the whole club. And there's like, there's wait staff. there's, you know, what's going on in the back. And sometimes that's, as a headliner, that's why you have, or as like any comic, you need to have 5 to 10 minutes more than the bare minimum of each one allows. So as an MC, you do say 15, you would need to have 20 to 25 because say Eric needed you to either go on again after the headliner because the headliner decided to get off early. And now, now the wait staff hasn't cleared all their checks. And so say, you know, now, oh, I need 10 more minutes because, you know, so-and-so got off early. And the waitresses need to get the checks out. So can you do 10 more minutes? It's not can you. I need you to do 10 more minutes.
Yeah, you're going to be up there for 10 minutes. So don't be dumb.
Yeah, so that's why you need 20 to 25 minutes because you may run into that situation. It's rare, but it does happen. And you have to be prepared for it.
Hmm.
But basically, this podcast is more about fears than yeah, comedy, right. Even though I will talk comedy forever. You have an interesting fear, considering you came from an environment that's very, very arachnid forward in Arizona. A lot of scorpion and other.
You'd think being around it all my life, seeing it all my life, mm-hmm. like I'd be okay. But still, to this day, when I see a spider, I'm just like, yeah, this is life and death right here.
I always think it's just because of the way they always are, like, on guard as soon as you are. Like, it's immediately like,
yes, yes.
The mutual, like, whoa. Like, I wasn't.
Yeah, like, I'm afraid of it. It's afraid of me. We don't want to be here, but one of us is going to die.
Yeah.
That's every encounter with a spider.
So, does scorpions fall in the same category as spiders?
I would put scorpions even higher,
okay,
than spiders, because scorpions are just spiders that can sting you. Mm-hmm. That's how I see them. And crazy enough, I've never really seen that many scorpions. I've maybe seen two or three in my life. Mm-hmm. Everyone else I know sees them like on a monthly basis. Oh. I don't know what it is, and I'm thankful for it. I hate them. I don't want to see more.
Yeah. How did you, do you remember like how this started? Is it just been something that constantly has been in your?
You know, I watched Arachnophobia really young.
Okay.
And the scene, spoiler alert, the scene where they go, I think they go into like a basement, mm-hmm. where it's like all the nest of the spiders, all the eggs are everywhere. And then they like hatch and just start coming at them. Terrified me.
Yeah.
Just absolutely terrified me. I was like, that's real. That's going to happen.
Yeah. Like I've always, that movie did, you know, kind of like, it was like.
Ruined so many people.
It's like for spider people, it's their it. For people, it's like,
yeah.
For people that are afraid of clowns, the movie's it. For spiders, it's Arachnophobia.
See, I like scary movies. I love to be scared. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen. I don't think they've made a good scary movie in a long time. Like this latest It.
The first one was really good. Like I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, the first one was terrifying. Yeah. But well, these new ones, I don't know, like, it's a.
Well, I thought the new part one was pretty good with the kids and stuff. But I mean, it's like, I think it's hard to make a scary movie that passes the board and, you know.
I feel like it's all they try to go for now is just the jump scare. Mm-hmm. That's all they go for. And if you're paying attention, you know it's coming because the little music starts going, the camera slows down, and then all of a sudden, scary.
Yeah. And
I want to see like real scary. I don't know if you've seen, I feel like nobody's ever seen this movie. I don't even know if it's real. Rose Red. It's a Stephen King movie.
I have not.
What's that? It's like a 4-part series or something. One of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my life.
I should introduce you to Ducky because he does a horror movie podcast, and so I wonder if he's
okay.
If they've hit that one because they do it with a comic, David Jessup, and some of the former, I guess, managers at the Arlington Improv and stuff. They're big horror movie fans, and so they do you pick a horror movie, and then they'll discuss it. And so
I gotta see if they've done that one. Cause that one, I feel like nobody has seen it. And I know it's real. I know it happened. I remember watching it.
Maybe
I even tried to buy it on DVD now, but like I bought it from a different country. So it doesn't play on my DVD player.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm sure there's a way to find it. I mean, if you just go on, maybe it's on a stream somewhere, like a streaming service.
I've been looking for a long time. If anybody finds it, mm-hmm. find me because I want to watch it again. See if it's still. I want to see if it holds up.
Okay. Arachnophobia still holding up?
100%. Yeah. yeah. It's spider. Oh, you know. And I had a moment. I've had a few like encounters with spiders that really like terrified me. Like one crawled on my neck when I was driving. Almost jumped out of the truck. But the worst one, and this I know spiders don't like me too, because mm-hmm. I've all my life, I see a spider, I kill it. That's the way I've rolled. Mm-hmm. But there was a little pause in that. I took a truce because the war was getting a little one-sided. You know, it's like, that's like 1,000 spiders dead, me, you know, still here.
Okay.
So I took a little truce until one day it was not that long ago. I was walking around my apartments and there's this giant spider. I mean, it was huge, just hanging off a tree. And against my better judgment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to kill it. This seems too dangerous to just leave. Mm-hmm. So I started throwing, I'm a little baby, so I didn't get too close. I was throwing little rocks at it. Spider ran away. The next day, I'm coming into my parking garage. I swear to God, that same spider is right next to my door, just like waiting for me. I know is the same spider, the same color, everything. And that was like 100 feet away from the door when it happened. The fact that it tracked me down and waited for me right there at the door. I know, like there's never going to be a truce between me and spiders.
Just figuring it, going home and Googling you and seeing your comedy.
I like to think that it just, you know, like waited in the bushes till the day it finally saw me again. And then I was like, you know what? Now I'm going to get them.
But I don't think spiders have sight. They just do.
Do they not?
No, I think they're mostly blind. Like they have a bunch of eyes, but I don't think it's anything like visual, because that's what their web is, what they use to kind of, I guess, locate. And so they build those webs so that when something hits it, they know it is their, it's their eyes, because it helps. Yeah. They know exactly where on the web that is. And so then that's how they attack.
This was a special spider. This was one of those super spiders. Yeah. Terrifying. Just cause I didn't even see it till I was almost at the door handle. You know, I went to grab it and I was like, oh crap. And I had a big old case of water too. It was a mess.
So how do you handle, like, do you just, so you're always immediately kill? You don't question, you don't try to.
No. Yeah. Immediately. Like as soon as I see one, I'm grabbing a shoe. I'm never going to get near it. Okay. Just because there's that fear that, like, you don't know what, some of them jump, you know, you don't know when that one's going to jump at you.
So how do you handle, like, the spider filter where it's like on your phone or whatever, it looks like a spider?
Oh, that doesn't really bug me. You know, it's because it's, you know.
Okay.
Once I see like the light shine off like the hairs of it or something, yeah, you know, that's when it's real.
Okay.
Or like the creepy, you know, I just don't like them. You know when it's real.
So yeah. Does that affect your, like, is Spider-Man like the lowest hero for you?
That's crazy. I love Spider-Man. I love him. But something, I think it's the legs. Honestly, I think it's the 8 legs.
Okay.
And the eyes, and the fact that you don't know what they're going
to
do.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just hard to determine if they're poisonous or not by just the.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that. I'm like, yeah. And I don't want to study that. I don't, yeah. Like, what am I? A spider study guy? I don't know the term for that.
But yeah, like brown recluse looks exactly like every other spider you've seen in your entire life, but deadly as poison.
Any brown spider I see, if it has even a speck of brown, I'm like, that's a brown recluse.
Yeah.
Any black spider, that's a black widow. I don't take any risks, you know, because they say like the daddy long legs are harmless and good to have around. No, I don't want them around. And that was a big thing in Arizona. Like everywhere you go, almost everybody's house, you look up. And I stopped looking up when I'd go to people's front doors. Mm-hmm. Right above it, there'd just be nests. Hundreds of them. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to keep looking forward. I'm going to ignore all the death just hanging above me and just trying to enjoy my day.
It's a good thing. Good call. Thank you for doing this, Mike. Where can people find you on social media if they want to?
Social media, Always Tribbin on Instagram.
Good tag.
Mike Tribby on Facebook. Basically, Mike Tribby. You know, there's like 4 or 5 of us out there.
Wow. I didn't think there was that many, but
I feel like I'm the most degenerate one out of us.
Okay.
I've looked this up.
Okay.
The other ones wear like suits and stuff. Not me.
Definitely not you. You dress like a retired cop. And
yeah, basically. Yeah, I'm trying to play it like I'm at least undercover, you know? I'm trying to at least blend in a little bit.
Okay, 21 Jump Street.
So well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the oldest 21 Jump Street.
Yeah. Hey guys, you got some drugs? I'm gonna go party.
Thanks again, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was Mike Tribby. It was a fun interview. It was good to get back into the swing of things this weekend. I recorded 3 interviews this weekend so far, and I have 1 redo for Paul Smith that I have to do because I thought I had the files, and I tragically learned that I do not. So we will record that episode tomorrow. As for the podcast itself, check out Mike Tribby at Always Tribbin on all social media, as well as Mike Tribby on Facebook. He's got some comedy clips up and pictures galore. And check him out. He's a new up and coming comic, and he's got drive and desire. And hopefully, you know, he'll figure out the rest of the comedy game, and you'll see him like performing at regular shows across the Metroplex. You can see him at Redfield's Tavern most Wednesday nights, so you can check him out there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area if you're around the hospital district in the Dallas area. So check out Mike Tribby. As for me, this last month has been a whirlwind, as I have been working gigs as well as just trying to reclaim all my files for my old laptop. I went to go edit Paul's podcast the first week of August, and my laptop would not turn on, and so I left it charged. I tried a new battery. That didn't work. I tried a new power supply. And that didn't work. And so I had to go and get a new laptop. So the first thing is I thought I could get a laptop that was just kind of a spare laptop, but it had a slot where I could put another hard drive in, and I was going to sneak this hard drive into that. That did not work. It's a little ThinkPad off of Woot for $200, and it's now my workhorse. I love working with it as far as editing my podcasts and just kind of, it's small. It can go in a lot of areas. It's got really nice sound. And so I use that for the podcast editing and mixing. But I also got a second laptop, a Lenovo IdeaPad, for my comedy career and clips like that. That one's got 20 gigs of RAM and a terabyte hard drive in it. So it's more up to date, and it'll be my, go-to laptop for most things. And I can also edit podcasts on it as well. So I am set up. Once again, I got the files off my hard drive. I had to get a hard drive enclosure, which was interesting to learn. It's turned my little Acer hard drive into a hard drive I can pull information off of from time to time. So that was really nice. I backed up all my stuff to my external drive. So if, God forbid, this happens again to both of my new laptops, I will be prepared. And so hopefully we won't have any more interruptions. Thank you guys again, if you're still listening, for your patience while I get this figured out. We'll have a bunch more interviews. Next week, I'll be at the Looney Bin in Little Rock, Arkansas, so I will not record any episodes. That's why I got quite a few this week to kind of, make sure that I was set up for the coming weeks. And so I will get some more recordings out in a couple of weeks here and get some more guests as well. Some comics, some non-comics. One of them was one of the premier real estate people in the country. So it's really cool, really fun interviews coming up. Hope you guys, are still out there and you're listening, and hopefully you'll love the new sound and platform. Getting used to this new recording session, microphone and recorder. And so it's a little bit more clear sound. Like I realized, wow, this thing's really, really way more in depth. Like it's a little bit better preamps than what I had previously with these little Zoom H5s that I have. So it's a Zoom H8, but it's doing a wonderful job of podcasting. So next week I'll be at the Looney Bins in Little Rock. Then after that, I'll be at Hyenas in Fort Worth for October 20th and 21st. I also have a show at Dallas Comedy Club on September 17th, The Joke Machine, where I help people with the audience. We write bits together. So if you're interested in any of those shows, check me out at ryanperio.com. I will have those shows up on the calendar here in just a little short while. But thanks again for listening to the Some of All Fears podcast. Thank you guys for wading through and in this whole month while I've been trying to get all my stuff in a row. And thanks for listening to the Some of All Fears podcast, and have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook. Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnarolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Some of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, SOMEFEARFANS, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. You know, give us some feedback if on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at ryanperio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened, and everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.